Good evening, and happy December 8th, 2015. This is the Crystal Silence League Hour. I am your host, the Reverend John St. Germain. My goodness, I'm so happy to be here. I say that every week, don't I? And it's true, when you're 55 years old and you wake up in the morning and you realize that you're in solid form and not spirit form, it's a cause for celebration, believe me. And I get up, I look in the paper. If my name's not in the obituary, I have coffee. That's what George Burns used to say. This is the Crystal Silence League Hour. I'm John St. Germain. Our topic this week, the seven factors of enlightenment. And it is a wonderful topic. And my goodness, let's look at our studio audience here. And we have a full room tonight. My goodness, we couldn't fit any more people in this room. Let's take a brief musical interlude, and we'll be right back with our crystal of the week, our prayers of the week, and our topic of the week. Please join us. Back. That was Oscar Peterson, by the way. And believe me, I could listen to Oscar Peterson all night. He's arguably one of our greatest piano players of the jazz persuasion. Everybody in our room, it says here, polishing their crystal balls. Candelo has joined us of Candelo's Corner, a show that if you're not listening to, by golly, my goodness, you should be listening to him. This is the Crystal Silence League. The Crystal Silence League, for those of you who don't know, it was formed in 1917 or so by Claude Alexander Conlon for the purpose of distributing and sending positive prayer and affirmation for those in need. It was passed into the silence when Mr. Conlon passed into the silence in 1958 when he passed into the silence and died, but was reborn in cybernetic form. By adepts of the Missionary Independent Spiritual Church. And you can find us, www.crystalsilenceleague.org. And I have heard, by the way, from people who, even though the Crystal Silence League was more or less in the silence, I've heard from people who continued to practice. Even though Mr. Conlon passed away, I've heard from people who still have membership cards from the old Crystal Silence League and who still continue to practice. Some people sent me facsimiles of the membership card, and I may post those. I will, in fact, post those on our website. People still continue to practice crystal ball projection as taught by our founder, Claude Alexander Conlon. And that just blew my mind. People emailed me and said, yeah, you know, we still practiced. They were still practicing, even though our founder passed into the silence. He probably, in the silence even, from the other side, still projecting his thoughts and well wishes. As you know, we practice crystal ball projection. We teach the practical use of crystals, all these techniques of which you can read about in our free newsletter, which you can download past issues on our website and subscribe to new issues. And we also have a couple of books that you can purchase: Crystal Gazing, Lessons and Instructions in the Silent Influence of the Crystal, and Personal Lessons, Codes, and Instructions for Members of the Crystal Silence League. These are inexpensive. They're $5 each, and you get one free if you buy a crystal from us. So, my gosh, what are you waiting for? I sound like one of those commercials on late-night TV, don't I? But you do benefit greatly from practice with a crystal. Tonight's topic, the seven factors of enlightenment, and we're going to go from there to the Eightfold Path taught by the Buddha. The Visuddhimagga, it's called, the Path of Purification. And, people were not called Buddhists until the 19th century, I think, late 19th century. People were called students of the Dharma. They were called practitioners of meditation. They were called Dharmists. They were called a lot of things. But followers of the Visuddhimagga was a common title, the Path of Purification. And Buddhism is a Western term, and calling it an ism is really a misnomer. Buddhism is not an ism. It's a widespread and diverse series of techniques. So it's an interesting topic that we'll get into at some point. Buddha fans, Buddha homies. Yeah, we're all Buddha homies. That's what we should call ourselves. Yay, Buddha homies. And the Dharma. It's called the Dharma. And people who practiced Buddhism, they didn't really have a name for themselves. You know, they said, you know, we follow the Dharma. We study and follow the Dharma. The Dharma being the way, the way things are. The Dharma has multiple meaning of terms. There, you'll find that when you study Buddhism, they talk about dharmas, and these are characteristics. They're called realities or truths or characteristics. Like a glass has dharmas of solidity, transparency, fragility. Transparency. What else does glass have? Refraction. Those are dharmas of glass. Those are the marks of the glass, the dharmas. So there you have. There you have it. There's all kinds of stuff in this. I made the mistake of getting into a Facebook conversation about someone who talked about make-believe religions, and he listed them: Islam, Christianity, Judaism, Buddhism. And someone was talking about how Buddhism wasn't really make-believe, and he said, yeah, it is. Buddhists believe this, and Buddhists believe that, and Buddhists believe in this, and Buddhists believe that. And I got in the middle of it, and he said, I'm no expert on Buddhism, but a quick Google. And I said, well, I am an expert on Buddhism. I studied it for 30 years, and I almost took the robe, and everything you said is wrong. And so I got in the middle of it foolishly. And if you want to know the truth, of the firstfold noble truth, that there is suffering in the world, just spend a few minutes on Facebook. But sometimes I like to remind myself. So here we are. Let's look at our crystal of the week, which is I've got it here somewhere. Yeah, it's purple kyanite. We're going down the kyanites, and kyanite is a fairly recent addition to the crystal bestiary. It was. Not discovered until the 19th century, so we don't have ancient wisdom about kyanite like we do most stones. We have stuff about amber and tiger's eye that goes back before the Christian era, but kyanite really wasn't discovered until the 19th century, so we don't have ancient knowledge about it. Well, we may, but we don't know it. And one of its characteristics that's curious about kyanite is that it doesn't accumulate negative energy or vibration, so you never have to clean it. You don't have to clear it. And it has an infinite capacity for absorbing negative energies. And its higher vibrational energy is said to be unlimited. So it's a stone that you can work with no matter what color it is. It can work with any and all of the chakras. And so it's one of the best stones to use for attunement. Now, the color harmonic can be aligned with every chakra. So purple kyanite being purple, you're talking about the upper chakras. You're talking about the third eye and the crown. So this is very good for inducing tranquility, calmness, for inducing visions. It helps enhance communication, psychic awareness. It will use as a support for meditation. If you're trying to go into the higher meditative states, this can help boost you into the higher meditative states, meditative absorption. It's useful for those who have difficulty with meditation. The monkey mind, calming the monkey mind. It can also encourage you to take emotional and mental risks. If you have trouble taking those mental leaps of faith and love and concepts, conceptual leaps, it can help you do that, take you to the next level if you don't have confidence in your ability to do that. So that's what purple kyanite can help you with. It's good to have some of that. Kyanite's not cheap. I'll tell you, it's not cheap. And it's really hard to make gems out of it. It's brittle, so it's hard to cut and very hard to get if you want an amulet or a ring pendant made from it. They're not cheap. It's very, very hard to cut. I know lapidaries who, kyanite, oh my God, yeah. So difficult, but in its raw form, you can get it. Not the cheapest stone, but a very good one to have. Let's start our prayers now. It's the custom of the show. I download some of our prayers. We have hundreds of prayers a week. We have hundreds of them a week, and I'm not exaggerating at all, and I usually download between a dozen and 20, and there's some people that post, 10 prayers in a row. I don't read all of theirs. I kind of condense them if I can, and we do not name these out loud. They're anonymous. We're sort of the 12-step prayer program of the internet, and people post these prayers, and I read them, identify them by prayer ID. So if you will, join me in sending positive thoughts and affirmations to the following people. And this is prayer ID number 44896, who sends prayer to a loved one, and this loved one is a cat who has illness. The cat's name is Sammy. I can tell you the cat's name. I don't guess the cat will mind. The cat, Sammy, is 15 years old and has a rare form of cancer apparently, and has 6 months or less to live. So let's pray for the good cat Sammy, who's been a good pet for 15 years. And then we have prayer ID 44896, I think. Needs help with a friend who get his TWIC card, TWIC card, as soon as possible, to get a good job and be contented with it. We have prayer ID number 44894, relationship help. And she prays that someone with the initial T will forever love her, that he never leaves her and never gives up on her. That's a passionate love. Prayer ID number 44893 needs finances improved so they can have a new home and a new career. Prayer ID number 44892 needs help for him and his mom to have a successful and successful life, and also that someone with the initial B will rest in peace. We have prayer ID number 44891SG. Has some in-laws who are ill, and also, this is not a good season for cats, they have a sick cat as well. Let's see what's wrong with, the cat's kidneys are failing. That's called CRF, chronic renal failure. I had a cat die of that. They decline very fast with that. And, pray for their cat and pray for the in-laws who seem to be sick with some blood infection. My heart goes out to them. Prayer ID number 44890SG has back pain, apparently a torn nerve in the base of the spine. Prayer ID number 44889EH needs protection from danger from people who are not nice. Prayer ID number 44888MB needs prayers that the next few months be a period of beautiful transformation. Oh, that's well put. prayer ID number 44887 MP. Prays for the healing of a person's heart and for the truest love ever for 2016. And we have prayer ID number 44886 HEH, who prays for protection from a weird woman who stared at him in a very derogatory way for a long time. It sounds like he fears the evil eye. And we have prayer ID number 44885. This is our last one. RM, who prays that the plan of love and light work out and may it seal the door wherever evil dwells and let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Amen. And let's take just a few moments to pray and send positive thought to all those in need of love and comfort. Amen. Amen. People are praying for their cats. Bad season for cats. Our topic this week, the path of purification, the seven factors of enlightenment. Last week we were talking about the 12 links of dependent arising, and just to go over those again, it all starts with ignorance, the lack of right understanding, which gives rise to mental formations. These are the impurities of habitual actions, consciousness, that gives rise to consciousness, and these, of course, are the that's perceiving, comprehending, recognizing, that gives rise to name and form, that is your mental and physical processes, your mind and body, and that gives rise to the six senses, the eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and mind, that gives rise to contact. Contact arises from the six senses, that's the experiences created when the six senses sense, when you see, hear, touch things. That gives rise to feelings, and feelings, of course, are either pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. And I always think of neutral sensation as boring, just you're bored by it. That gives rise to craving. Craving arises from feeling, and that's where the problems begin. That's sensuous desire, the pursuit of pleasure. That's when you identify with objects. That gives rise to clinging. Clinging is an attachment to objects, and objects don't have to be physical objects. That can be things such as attitudes and beliefs, and feel. It can be. You can even cling to feelings. You can cling to people. You can cling to ideologies. You can cling to belief systems. And boy, do we see some clinging now! Oh my God, do we see some clinging now? Shut the borders down. Don't let people in the country. Make people wear ID cards. Does the word witch hunt ring a bell? And this comes up every few years. And this comes. Buddha said one of the most pernicious forms of clinging was to rites and rituals and to beliefs and to opinions. That gives rise to becoming. Becoming means to give birth, create, exist. That's I making. That's I as in capital I, me. Making the whole idea of identity. And becoming gives rise to birth. And that's either physical birth or the moment-to-moment arising of renewed consciousness. That's the condition of old age and death. And that's the final link in it. Death is one of the greatest afflictions and fears of the untrained mind. And aging and death are the of the conditions for ignorance. You see, it's a big link, big circle. I'm going to tell you that there is a very complicated discussion in a book called the Visuddhimagga by a man named Buddhaghosa, who lived a long time ago. It's an immense book, and it's online. In fact, I've got the hardcover. It's Jesus Christ! It's about 8 inches thick, but it's online, and it's in the Theravadin sector of Buddhism. It's a must read. That and the Comprehensive Manual of Abhidharma go hand in hand, and it's a point by point discussion of Buddhist doctrine, and it talks quite a bit about these 12 links and how to break them and the important links to break. But we're going to move on from there to the Buddhaghosa and Nagarjuna are two big names in Buddhism, and man, if you can comprehend those two guys, you might as well just leave the world and go on to the next life. If you can comprehend those guys, if you can rub elbows with those guys, sit on the porch, you know, and drink a cup of tea with them, you know, my hat's off to you. So the seven factors of enlightenment, and the Tipitaka, which is the three baskets of the Buddhist canon, is festooned with references to these factors. And these are the factors that lead to Bodhi, the enlightenment, the Bodhi mind. That's what you go for, the Bodhi mind. That's Bodhi is the root word for Buddha. And I won't go there. It's a historical reference. I won't go there right now, though. Buddha felt so strongly about this that at one point he said, just as monks in a peaked house, all rafters whatsoever go together to the peak, slope to the peak, join in the peak, and all of them, the peak is reckoned chief. Even so, monks, the monk who cultivates and makes much of the seven factors of wisdom slopes to nirvana, inclines to nirvana, tends to nirvana. So these are the buttresses, the very roots of nirvana. And that's not a bad thing. So these seven factors are mindfulness, keen investigation of the Dharma, energy, rapture or happiness, calm, concentration, and equanimity. So let's look at these. And I wanted to read this to you. There was a man called Kassapa. And this was the venerable Mahakassapa. Mahakassapa was chief of Buddha's disciples in supernormal abilities. He could do wonderful magic tricks. And by that I don't mean by David Copperfield. I mean like Dumbledore. He could do amazing things. And but he was very sick. He had a severe illness. And the Buddha visited him. And he spoke to Mahakassapa, and he said, well, Kassapa, how is it with you? Are you bearing up? Are you enduring? Do your pains lessen or increase? Are there signs of your pains lessening and not increasing? And Mahakassapa said, no, Lord, I'm not bearing up. I'm not enduring. The pain is very great. There's a sign not of the pains lessening, but of their increasing. And the Buddha said, Kassapa, these seven factors of enlightenment are well expounded by me, cultivated and much developed by me, and when cultivated and much developed, they conduce to full realization, perfect wisdom, to nirvana. What are the seven? Mindfulness, this, O Kassapa, is well expounded by me. Now here is Kassapa, who apparently has dysentery. Most people think he had dysentery. And he's on his sickbed, you know, puking and crapping his guts out, and Buddha says, well, let me tell you about the seven factors of enlightenment, Mahakassapa. He says, mindfulness, O Kassapa, is well expounded by me, cultivated and much developed by me, and when cultivated and much developed, it conduces to full realization, perfect wisdom, to nirvana. Investigation of the Dhamma, etc., etc., energy, rapture, calm, concentration. Equanimity, O Kassapa, is well expounded by me. These seven factors of enlightenment, verily, Kassapa, are well expounded by me, cultivated and much developed by me, and when cultivated and much developed, they conduce to full realization, perfect wisdom, to nirvana. And Mahakassapa, in between throwing up and, you know, crapping, I guess, says, verily, blessed one, they are factors of enlightenment. Verily, O welcome one, they are factors of enlightenment, uttered Mahakassapa. Thus spoke the Buddha, and the venerable Mahakassapa, rejoicing, welcomed the utterances of the worthy one. And the venerable Mahakassapa rose from that illness. There and then, that ailment of the venerable Mahakassapa vanished. Now, the Buddha had this ability. He could speak, and people were, you know, just transformed immediately. Now, there are many discourses like this. And this is very pertinent to what we teach in the Crystal Silence League. Aldous Huxley, who wrote a lot about mystical states, was a devout student of Buddhism and Hinduism and Oriental thought. And in a book he wrote called Ends and Means, in the mid-40s, I think, wrote, man's mind tremendously and profoundly influences and affects the body. If allowed to function viciously and entertain unwholesome and harmful thoughts, mind can cause disaster, nay, even kill a being. But mind also can cure a sick body. When concentrated on right thoughts with right understanding, the effects mind can produce are immense. Now, this sounds like something Mr. Conlon would have written. Mind not only makes sick, it also cures. An optimistic patient has more chance of getting well than a patient who is worried and unhappy. The recorded instances of faith healing include cases in which even organic diseases were cured almost instantaneously. This was written by Aldous Huxley in the mid-40s. Now, Buddhism is the teaching of enlightenment. There's a lot of cultural baggage that gets attached to it depending on where you are in the world. Buddhism insinuates and adapts itself to whatever culture it's in. That's why Buddhism in Tibet is different from Buddhism in India, different from Buddhism in China, different from Buddhism in Japan. But the basic teaching is the same. It teaches enlightenment. So one who's keen on attaining enlightenment should know the impediments that block the path to enlightenment. Now, life, according to Buddhism, right understanding, is suffering. Now, I never like to lead with that. Life is suffering. The First Noble Truth says there is suffering. The suffering exists in the world, and I don't like to lead with that, and I haven't led with that. But if you understand Buddhism correctly, life is suffering. The very essence of life, and the very root of life, there's suffering. There's unsatisfactoriness, and that suffering is based on ignorance. Ignorance is the experience of that which is unworthy of experiencing, namely evil. We see evil in the world, we experience evil in the world, and we cannot escape evil of the world as long as we're ignorant of the nature of the world. Further, it's the non-perception of the conglomerate nature of the aggregates, which we discussed, the five aggregates, non-perception of sense organ and object in their respective natures, non-perception of the emptiness of the relativity of reality, non-perception of the dominant nature of the sense-controlling faculties, non-perception of the thusness of the four truths, thusness is it's hard to translate, that which is, the infallible nature of the four truths. I don't want to sound like an inerrant person, but the four truths, the truth of the four truths. And the five hindrances, which are the nutriment of this ignorance. And they're called hindrances because they close in and they cut off and they obstruct the path to enlightenment. They hinder the understanding of the way of the release from this suffering that permeates every moment of our existence. Now, this suffering can vary from this mild discomfort that's always on the earth, on the edge of our consciousness, to the immense suffering that we feel on occasion. There's never a moment when the suffering stops. Even when we feel happy at our happiest, when we're at our happiest, that suffering is on the edge, waiting there. It's a dull hum, but it's there. This vague sense of unsatisfactoriness. You know, some people call it waiting for the other shoe to drop or something, but there's something there. We know that looking at a sunset, we go, oh God, how beautiful, it's going to go. We know that when we're enjoying our children, our grandchildren, a wonderful experience, it's not going to last. And that knowledge is not going to last. It's a vague misunderstanding. But even that, those are bad examples. There's an existential suffering that you cannot escape just by being alive, and people deny this. You know, they have the ostrich thing, but it's there. And how sensitive we are to it varies. There are people who are insensitive to it, but it's there, and it's our ignorance that keeps it there. Now, there are nutrients to these hindrances. You know, we were talking about how fire has nutrients. And there are nutrients to these hindrances, and there are three evil modes of life that are nutrients: body, speech, and mind. And the body, speech, and mind wrongdoings, bodily, vocal, and mental wrongdoings. This threefold nutrient is in turn nourished by undisciplined senses, non-restraint of the senses, which is explained by the admittance of lust and hate into the six sense organs of eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and mind. It is that simple. But it's the most difficult thing in the world to train the eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and mind consciousnesses to just do not admit lust and hate, to shut them out, to drive them out, and only admit worthwhile inputs. The nutriment of non-restraint is shown to be lack of mindfulness and of complete awareness. The lack of these things. In the context of nutriment, now remember we were talking about this whole thing of fire. Fire has to, you take away the nutriment of fire, and fire is freed. Always keep that in the back of your mind. The drifting away of the object, the lapsing from the mind of the knowledge of the characteristics of existence, impermanence, suffering, and not self. That's the three characteristics of existence: impermanence, suffering, and not self. And forgetfulness of the true nature of things is the reason for non-restraint. We forget that. We forget that everything is impermanent. Everything has suffering at its root, and nothing has a self nature. That's the three ignorances. They're sometimes called the three taints. We see the three forms of delusions is that we see permanence when there's not permanence. We see beauty when there's not beauty, or we see lack of suffering when there's suffering, and we see self when there's not self. Those are the three forms of delusion that we constantly fall for. We forget that. That's the essence of the delusion or the ignorance. And we forget the true nature of things, and that's the reason we don't restrain. We indulge because we think this is pleasurable, and this is always going to be there, and it's always, and that it is self-nature, that it's real. We believe it's real. But we forget this, and so we overindulge every aspect of our senses. And this is the hindrance to the path that leads to release. It's the nutriment. It's the fuel for the fire. So when one does not bear in mind the transience and the other characteristics of things, that one allows oneself to do all kinds of liberties in speech and deeds, the suffering of the world, everything that's going on right now, these idiots that are running their mouths about all this ignorance, all this hate and ignorance, and we should do that, we drop bombs. This guy that said, does sand glow in the dark? Let's find out. I couldn't believe he said that. Trump, all these idiots. This is why. Undisciplined senses, lust and hate. They are like little children who ate too much ice cream for dinner, and now they're crying because their stomach hurts. The suffering of the world was diagnosed by the Buddha like a doctor diagnosing a stomach ache. He said, why does the world do this? And this is why. In this simple process, this is why. Now, people can argue about this all they want. People do argue about this, but open your eyes and look. This is why. It's undisciplined senses. The sense gates are wide open. And this undisciplined indulgence of the senses is the source. And that 12 links of dependent arising tells you why. When one does things that are against improvement, if you're not constantly improving and purifying the consciousness and the mind, you backslide. Things get worse. Things fall apart. When one lays holds of things in a state of delusion, believing them to be pleasant, beautiful, permanent, and substantial, when you behave this way, non-restraint is inevitable. It's nourished. It's a wildfire. It goes out of control. And below this, and right below that lack of mindfulness and complete awareness, lies an unsystematic reflection and there's a word for that, and I've written it down here in my notes. Ionisomanaschiara, which the best translation I found anywhere is unsystematic reflection, which is it's like you think you're being deep, but you're not. You know, you're looking at things, and you think you have knowledge about it. It seems reasonable, it seems logical, but it's not. It's unsystematic. That's when you look at it and you make false conclusions. You think the permanent is permanent, the painful is pleasurable, the soulless has a soul, the bad is good. You know, you've analyzed it and come to the wrong conclusions. That's aiohisomanaschiara. That's in Pali. Unsystematic reflection. You've looked at the right data and you've come to the wrong conclusions, and you say, okay, that's right, that's reality. So this constant rolling on, this constant continuing is called samsara. This is how Buddha described the world we live in, samsara, which one very good translation of that is restless wandering. Restless wandering, rolling on, restless wandering, samsara, an endless restlessness, samsara. It's rooted in unsystematic thinking, in ignorance. When unsystematic thinking increases, it does two things. It does two things. It perpetuates itself, and it increases the lust for becoming more, more, more. Ignorance being present, the origination of the entire mass of suffering comes to be. Thus, a person who's a shallow thinker is like a ship drifting at the wind's will, like a herd of cattle swept into the whirlpools of a river. These are all similes that I collected. Like an ox yoked to a wheel contraption, it just goes on revolving in the cycle of existence, again and again, endlessly. Samsara. And believe me, when a Buddha says the word samsara, it has a bitter taste in his mouth. You have samsara on the one hand, nirvana on the other. And it's said that imperfect confidence in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha is the condition that develops unsystematic reflection. When you don't have full confidence in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, it creates an imperfect practice. One of the things that when you take vows, you say, I put full confidence in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. That's one of the things you say. You put your confidence, you put your faith in it. It's not an unreasoning faith, because Buddha said, "Iho pasiko, come see," you know, test it yourself. But you have confidence that you're going to get results, and you have if you have an imperfect confidence in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, it develops an unsystematic reflection. And imperfect confidence is due to non-hearing the Dharma. This is when you don't hear it. You don't hear it correctly, or you don't hear all of it. Like I said, I experienced that today and on Facebook, and I just said, why am I even doing Facebook? I'll tell you a story. There was a man sitting on the floor hitting himself in the head with a hammer, and eventually his arm got tired, and he said, oh, that's much better. And then he moved from the floor to the couch, and that was even better for him. You know, think about that in terms of Facebook. Finally, you don't hear things of wisdom by not hanging around the wise and not consorting with the good. You know, you hear things of wisdom by hanging around people who know what they're talking about. You know, you hang out with the wise and you hang out with good people. That's how you find out what's wise and good. So spiritual companionship is the best company in the long run. So good friendship seems to be a necessary factor. And the lack of good friendship appears to be one of the basic reasons for the ills of the world. Can you dig that? The want of good companionship appears to be one of the root causes for the ills of the world. And conversely, the basis and nutriment of good can be shown to be good friendship. this furnishes one with the food of the Dharma, which in turn produces confidence in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. And when you have confidence, that's called the triple gem, by the way. In the triple gem, that comes into existence a profound or systematic way of thinking, the arousings of mindfulness, the seven factors of enlightenment, and deliverance through wisdom, one after the other in due order. Now, you understand that Buddha did not invent the Dharma. He discovered it. And this is something that is really essential. He said he never invented the Eightfold Path, which is what we're going to discuss. He said parts of it had already been discovered by other people. He just put it all together. And he said this is just the way you find enlightenment. This is the way you purify your mind and free yourself from suffering. And he said he didn't invent it. He just discovered where it was hidden, and he discovered it. And, you know, we're not talking about a series of religious beliefs. We're talking about a path of pieces of real nature, pieces of nature that when put together creates a liberation of the mind from what causes it to think wrong. And so let's deal with the enlightenment factors one by one, but first let's take a little break and maybe have a drink and look at our crystal balls, and if you need to, run off, and we'll have some station identification.
You are listening to the LMC Radio Network, whose art and information may be found on its webcast shows. The LMC Radio Network is a community radio alliance of metaphysical, spiritual, inspirational, and political justice broadcasters spanning a wide range of topics. Tune in Sundays for the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour, hosted by Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman Ollie. It features panel discussions on traditional African-American hoodoo spellcasting with members of the Association of Independent Readers and Rootworkers, plus free readings and magical rootwork advice for live call-in clients. The longest-running conjure show in the universe, it may be heard from 3 o'clock to 4:30 Pacific Time, Sunday afternoons. On Mondays, get ready for Candelo's Corner, starring Candelo Cambisa. This is the meeting place for all esoteric traditions. Candelo brings his insight as a Polero and eclectic spiritualist to his interviews with peers in Afro-Caribbean lineages, as well as representatives of numerous other spiritualities and religions. You can hear Candelo's Corner Monday evenings from 5 to 7 Pacific Time. Tuesdays feature two wonderful shows to suit your taste. On the Crystal Silence League Hour, John St. Germain provides spiritual guidance and tips on the practical use of crystals and crystal balls. His show starts at 5 p.m. Pacific Time and lasts for 1 hour. Next is In the Streets with Beverly Smith. Beverly provides up-to-the-minute reports on civil and social rights issues. Her one-hour show airs on Tuesday evenings at 6 p.m. Pacific Time. On Wednesday nights, Kai Arman broadcasts On Sacred Ground, a tapestry of our times comprising history, ethnography, and shamanism, featuring the voices of the land and the deceased, aided by scholars, spirit workers, and environmentalists. Kai's show airs from 5 to 7 Pacific Time. On Thursdays, it's the Now You Know Show with Professor Porterfield. In a variety show laced with country wit and biblical wisdom, the professor shares his knowledge of roots, delivers the lucky numbers, and explores the secrets of scriptural sorcery. From 6 to 7:30 p.m. Pacific Time, there's no end to the surprises. And on Saturday nights, come out and join Liquid Libations. Andrea Weston hosts this informal sharing and showcasing of poetry, short stories, and spoken word performances contributed by novices and professional wordsmiths. Call in and read your work. Liquid Libations may be heard on Saturday nights from 5 to 7 p.m. Pacific Time. All shows on the LMC Radio Network are sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company, located in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com. Add 3 hours for Eastern, tax and license may apply, train departure times and Burma shave signs subject to change without notice. LMC.
And we're back. Our topic tonight is the seven factors of enlightenment. And let's deal with those one by one. The first is known as sati, mindfulness. And it is the instrument most effective in self-mastery. And whosoever practices mindfulness has found the path to deliverance. That's no mean statement. It is fourfold mindfulness. Mindfulness consisting in contemplation of the body, contemplation of feeling, contemplation of mind, and contemplation of mental objects. And we, I believe, started this whole topic on that with the Mahapathisati Sutta, the great disposition on mindfulness. And I will tell you that the person lacking in mindfulness cannot achieve anything worthwhile. The Buddha's final admonition to his disciples on his deathbed was, all component things of reality are impermanent. Work out your deliverance with heedfulness. And I'll tell you that in Pali, Vaya Dhamma Sankara Appamandena Sampapadetha. And these last words, you know, when I was working through my divorce, it took forever. And I had that on a post-it note on my monitor. All compound things of reality are impermanent. Work out your deliverance with diligence. It kind of had an ironic meaning to me, you know. But I'm so irreverent. You know, I'm glad that Buddha doesn't strike people down for, you know, irreverency and stuff. Buddha, you know, like laughs at this sort of thing, I think. And the last words of Venerable Sariputta, who was the foremost disciple of the Buddha, he died some time before the Buddha, were similar. Strive on with heedfulness. This is my advice to you. And he said that and then dropped dead. In both of these injunctions, the most significant word is appamatta, which literally means incessant heedfulness. Now, you cannot be heedful unless you're aware of your actions, whether these actions are mental, verbal, or physical. You cannot be heedful unless you're aware of what you're doing at every moment of your waking life. Now, only when you're fully awake and mindful of your activities can you distinguish good from bad and right from wrong. And it's in the light of this mindfulness that you'll see the beauty or the ugliness of your deeds. The word appamatta throughout the entire Tipitaka is used to denote sati, mindfulness. Now, pamada is defined as absence of mindfulness, you know, heedlessness. And the Buddha, in one of these passages, said, "Monks, I know not of any other single thing of such power to cause the arising of good thoughts, if not yet arisen, or to cause the waning of evil thoughts, if already arisen, as heedfulness. In him who is heedful, good thoughts, not yet arisen, do arise, and evil thoughts, if arisen, do wane." So this constant mindfulness and vigilance are necessary to avoid ill and perform good. I'm not talking about being neurotic. You know, don't be neurotic and don't, you know, if something bad, you know, if you think, you know, something evil comes up, you know, like, ooh, I hate that son of a bitch. You know, you don't slap yourself or, you know, burn yourself with a stick. You're aware of it. You're heedful of it. You're heedful. Okay, that was an evil thought. And it wanes. You know, you're heedful of it. And you substitute it with a wholesome thought. You substitute it. You let a wholesome thought arise in its place. And so you're constantly mindful. You're mindful of it. And you don't give it nurture. You don't give it nurture. You don't give it fuel. You don't continue it. You don't continue it. Furthermore, and furthermore, not only do I hate that son of a bitch, but I wish he and his entire family would rot in hell, tormented by demons, and that they would be ruined and all their money would go away and a truck would run over them. You know, you don't put fuel on the fire. You see, you don't let consciousness arise from consciousness from it. You let it go. You say, but you know, that, you know, that's not a worthy thought. That's unworthy. You know, you just let it go and let thoughts of compassion take its place. Now, I'm going to tell you, this is not easy. It's not easy. When I was a young man, I was an angry young man, and it took a long time for me not to be an angry young man. And I'm not an angry man now. I'm not an angry man now. So this constant mindfulness and vigilance are necessary to avoid ill and perform good. And the man with presence of mind, the person with presence of mind who surrounds himself with watchfulness of mind, and the person who's brave and earnest, you get ahead of the lazy and the heedless. Just like a racehorse outstrips a broken down old plow mule. The importance of sati, of mindfulness, in every dealing in life is clearly indicated by this passage from the Buddha. Mindfulness, O disciples, I declare, is essential in all things everywhere. It is as salt is to the curry. And I've never eaten salt without curry, so I don't know, but apparently it was important. I'll tell you this. The Buddha's life, as it's depicted in the canon, is just one example of pure mindfulness. He is the ever-mindful and the ever-vigilant. He's the very embodiment of mindfulness. There was never an occasion when the Buddha said, whoops, didn't see that coming. Never said that. Never a moment when he displayed laziness or sluggish inactivity or thoughtlessness. So right mindfulness, complete awareness in a way, is superior to knowledge. It's superior. Because in the absence of mindfulness, it's just impossible to make the best of your learning. You can be the smartest person in the world. You know everything, but without mindfulness, it's useless. It's useless knowledge. Intelligence devoid of mindfulness tends to lead you astray, in fact, and it entices you from the path of duty and from the path of righteousness. Even people who are well-informed and intelligent fail to see a thing in its proper perspective when they don't have mindfulness. I mean, we all know that. You know, my dad was a plant foreman at Roman Haas, where plexiglass acrylic was invented, and he worked with some very smart people, you know, engineers and things. And he used to come home and talk about educated fools, and what a wonderful statement. And later on, if you read about the Holy Grail, there was Parsifal, which was innocent. The word Parsifal means innocent fool, and kind of a similar thing. But he used to talk about these educated fools. That he said, Johnny, they have a lot of college education, but not a lick of common sense. And I think that's what we're talking about here. Mindfulness is conducive to great profit, the highest mental development, and it's through such attainment that deliverance from the suffering of samsara is possible. So this is a big statement. Mindfulness may be the biggest key of the seven factors of enlightenment. Now, in the Dhammapada, which is a very cool little book of sayings, it says, the man who delights in mindfulness and regards heedlessness with dread is not liable to fall away. He's in the vicinity of nirvana. That's a big statement. So we have about 6 minutes left. We can go to the second factor. So the second factor of enlightenment is keen investigation of the Dharma. It's the sharp and analytical knowledge of understanding the true nature of all things, animate or inanimate, human or divine. It's seeing things as they really are, and this means seeing them free from opinion, from prejudice, from bias. Seeing things as they are. Because the Dharma means things as they are, the way things are, you know, the true nature of reality. Apart from theories, apart from bias, apart from prejudice, the way things are. A keen investigation of the Dharma, the way things are. It's the analysis of all component things into their fundamental elements, right down to their ultimate nature. So through keen investigation, I'm not talking about physics. I'm not talking about physics. I'm talking about experiential reality. That's a very important thing here. You know, a study of physics ain't going to do you any good in this. So through keen investigation, one understands that all compounded things pass through inconceivably rapid moments of arising, reaching a peak, and ceasing. Just as a river in flood sweeps to a climax and fades away. And if you want the words for those, upada, tithi, and banga, arising, reaching a peak, and ceasing. The whole universe is constantly changing, never remains the same for two consecutive moments. All things, in fact, are subjected to causes, conditions, and effects. Systematic reflection, remember, comes naturally through right mindfulness, and it urges one to discriminate, to reason and investigate. Shallow thinking, not allowed. Unsystematic investigation, not allowed. It makes people muddle-headed, and then they fail to investigate the nature of things. My God, we are living in an age of muddle-headed thinking. All I hear, I can't even watch television. I can't watch the news. I can't watch these people talk. All you hear is muddle-headed thinking. People have thought, all my life, I've heard this, they think you can put out a fire by pouring gasoline on it. They think you can put out a fire by pouring gasoline on it. They think you can stop violence with more violence. It started with a fist. You know, a guy pushed someone, and the next guy hit him with a fist, and then someone poked him with a stick, and then the guy picked up a rock. He goes, well, this will end it. Then the other guy figured out you can sharpen the stick. Then the other guy figured out that you could shoot it with a bow and arrow. Then the other guy figured out you could hurl a rock with a bent stick. Then the other guy figured out you could drop a big rock on him. Then the other guy figured out you could drop a tree. Then they figured out fire. They could burn a guy's house down. Then they figured out gunpowder. And then they figured out guns, and they figured out bombs. Oh, this will end it. This will end war. Then they figured out how to split a fucking atom, and this will end it. So, you know, people have not learned that you don't put out a fire by pouring gasoline on it. And they don't learn. They don't learn. This is an example of lack of mindfulness, where you don't see reality as it is. Hey, guess what? You can't end violence with violence. But ultimately, we will, because we want to blow the world up, then it'll end. That's the way it ends. You know, somebody dies, then everybody dies, and hey, no more violence. So Buddhism is free from this this compulsion and coercion to take things to the ultimate level of stupidity. So this unsystematic investigation makes men muddle-headed, and they fail to see the nature of things. They can't see the cause and effect, the seed and the fruit, and the rise and fall of the compounded things. The things come from conditions. So the Buddha says, this doctrine is for the wise and not for the unwise. And, man, you should put that on a T-shirt. This doctrine is for the wise and not for the unwise. So Buddhism is free from this compulsion. At the very outset, the most skeptical mind will be pleased to hear that Buddhism calls for investigation. From the beginning to the end, Buddha calls for an open investigation of everything for those who have eyes to see and minds to think. The Buddha never endeavored to wring out of his followers blind and submissive faith in him, his teachings, or anything he said. He trains his disciples in the way of discrimination and intelligent inquiry. To the Kalamas, the Buddha answered, right it is to doubt, right it is to question what is doubtful and what is not clear. In a doubtful manner, wavering does arise. And you find this all throughout his teachings. Someday we'll read the Kalamas Sutra, where he tells you how to investigate truth. The Buddha says, if now knowing this and perceiving this, would you say we honor our master, and through respect for him we respect what he teaches? Nay, Lord, then which you affirm, O disciples, is it not only that which you yourselves have recognized, seen, and grasped? Yes, Lord. So in conformity with this correct attitude, true inquiry, philosophers of later times observed, as the wise test the purity of gold by burning, cutting, and examining it by means of a piece of touchstone, so should you accept my words after and not merely out of regard and reverence for me. You know, thus blind belief is condemned in the teachings of the Buddha, and the truth of the Dharma can be grasped through calm concentration and mindfulness. And we'll pick this up again next week. And we will pick this up again next week with our continuation of investigation of the Dharma. And we'll pick up number 3. Thanks for coming. I think we do have another show coming up in the streets, Beverly Smith. So, by golly, let's go out with a bang. We have a few seconds left, and I think we can go out with a little bit of music.